And now it's time for Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Have you swallowed too much of the state's poison? The Freedom Fiends will stick their fingers down your throat and hold your hair back while you hurl. And here they are, Nima V and Michael Dean.
Yo, this is Mr. Freedom Fiends. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends.
Coming in
with our music here. What's up, Nima?
This is Nima Vidati. Yeah, doing well. I'd like to welcome everybody to the talk radio show for Freedom Fiends. I, of course, am in Austin, Texas, and I'm assuming you're still in your windowed bunker.
Yes, I am. I am.
Yeah.
It's wonderful here. It's wonderful. And the weather's good, and I'm just thinking wonderful thoughts about Obama.
About Obama? What wonderful thoughts? Well, one thing is there's rumors that he's going to meet with the new Iranian president, like actually meet with him.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what the ramifications of that are.
Well, some people like the Leverets, who are Iran, quote, experts from Washington's establishment, but are actually smarter about it. They're not neocons or warmongers. And Scott Horton as well, following their lead, says that what needs to happen is some kind of Nixon in China moment where
– Ping pong diplomacy.
Well, where the realists decide that, hey, this isn't a moral thing. It's just a geopolitical thing. It'd probably be best for everybody and even for American power to have some kind of detente with Iran and just say, hey, just promise to only enrich up to 3.5, have the Russians give you anything else you need for your medical isotopes.
So they're going to have like 3-2 beer equivalent of radioactive material? Like how the government wants us to, you know, drive at a speed that's too slow to be real, and they want us to have nicotine vapes that don't really work and aren't strong enough, and they don't want us to have like hardcore marital aid pictures, just kind of softcore, you know, like Sears ladies underwear catalogs.
Well, the thing is, the Iranian government has said for years that they're willing to have the enriched uranium they need from, you know, ship it off to other places and they enrich it and send it back. They're always willing to make the deal. They just want the sanctions dropped. And the establishment has always been in the United States, no, you must stop all enrichment activity whatsoever, close everything down, do everything we say, and then maybe we can talk about lifting the sanctions. Maybe.
I love how like every politician in the past 10 years has been like, I'm adding more sanctions on Iran. And I'm like, is there anything left to sanction?
Right. Well, it's because the real goal is obviously regime change. But I heard a great point the other day that the thought that there needs to be some kind of regime change in Iran is so ridiculous when you realize that the current regime was a direct result of the previous regime change that America imposed.
Yeah.
Kicked out the democratically elected Mossadegh and installed the Shah, an evil dictator, as their puppet. The reaction to that is the current regime. So I don't know why they're going to try to restart that whole process. They're going to end up in the same place they are now.
Yeah, then part of that regime change blowback was a bunch of Americans being taken hostage in Iran at the consulate, and Jimmy Carter just wouldn't or couldn't do anything about it, and they end up being rescued by a private militia army hired by Ross Perot, of all people. And
were they rescued? I thought the Ayatollah called the hostage crisis off because he made some kind of deal with Ronald Reagan.
I know Ross Perot worked it out. I think you're thinking of a different hostage crisis. I think you're thinking of the Olympic Village in Germany one.
No, I'm thinking of the hostages at the embassy. I mean, wasn't it that the day Ronald Reagan was elected, he set up for them to be released?
I know Ross Perot did something that the government wasn't able to do, where he went in and rescued people, or he didn't go. He's an old man, but you know, he's kind of like there's a saying that too bad everyone who knows how to run America is busy cutting hair and driving taxis. You know, that thing of like everyone has an opinion.
I haven't heard that saying.
Yeah, but my dad's fond of it. But I think Ross Perot was just like, I'm not busy cutting hair, and I got a few billion dollars. I know how to run America. And he didn't really know how to run America, but he wanted to like shoot drug dealers. You know, he had a plan, And it was a really weird mixture of like the best and the worst of the right wing. Like you couldn't say, looking at his plan, what he was. It was kind of all over the map, like one from column A, one from column B. But he was an interesting cat, and he actually like hired a private army to rescue a bunch of people that were being held prisoner somewhere. And he also, when Steve Jobs got driven out of Apple, Ross Perot invested a bunch of money in his new company, Pixar. So Ross Perot is the reason we have all those silly, cool bug movies that stoned people and children like to watch.
Ah, okay. So I'm reading the wiki page for the hostage crisis now, and apparently the thing Argo was called the Canadian Caper. And that was, I'll read the paragraph here.
Well, there were two different sets of hostages, because the Argo thing is – and the movie wasn't really called Argo, the movie within the movie in Argo, the real thing, the cover story, it was called something else, but Argo is what it's called in the movie Argo. But basically, six of the people that worked there saw people coming over and were smart and got out the back door and just walked up the street to the Canadian consulate's house. The Ross Perot thing was the 70 people that were still in the embassy.
Death of the Shah on July 27th and the invasion of Iran by Iraq in September 1980 may have made Iran more receptive to the idea of resolving the crisis. Ronald Reagan defeated Jimmy Carter in November 1980, but Carter attempted to negotiate the release. I think he failed. Yeah, I think it had to do with Ronald Reagan cutting some kind of deal.
Just prior to the 1979 Iranian Revolution, the government of Iran imprisoned two EDS employees in a contract dispute. Okay, Perot organized and sponsored their rescue. The rescue team was led by retired U.S. Army Special Forces Colonel Arthur Simmons. When the team was unable to extract the two prisoners, they decided to wait for the mob of pro-Ayatollah revolutionaries to storm the jail and free all 10,000 inmates, many of whom were political prisoners. The two prisoners then connected with the rescue team, and the team spirited them out of Iran via a risky border crossing into Turkey. The exploit is recounted in the books On the Wings of Eagles by Ken Follett, which became a bestseller. There you go.
Okay, so that's separate from the embassy crisis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Huh. Well, yeah. There you go. Freeing prisoners. It's a good thing.
It is. Do it whenever you can. You know, I was thinking about Obama today. Oh, you got something else on Perot? I was thinking about Obama.
Not on Perot, but I'm just saying, I guess where we're at now, though, is that that's what needs to happen, is there needs to be some kind of negotiation. That's the only way you solve the Iran crisis. And the new president of Iran, because they don't have Ahmadinejad anymore to demonize. They have a guy that's saying, yeah, I'll close Fordo if you drop the sanctions. You know, a guy who's willing to negotiate. And he said earlier last week that President Obama sent him a letter that was fairly positive. So there could be some kind of easing of tensions on the horizon.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about Obama?
I thought we were. Do you have non-Iran Obama stuff? We can go for that.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking about the good old days back when Obama was running for president. And I was getting these things from pro-gun groups that I'm a member of or was a member of back then. I'm only a member of the Wyoming Gun Owners Association anymore because all the other ones want to ramp up the war on – well, not all of them. The NRA, I quit because they want to ramp up the war on drugs. And that is not a freedom move at all. You know, they kind of want to like we're true Americans. We think every American should have a gun, and so should every militarized local police force, and support the troops by giving them the weapons they'll use when they come to take away your guns. That's what the NRA looks like to me.
Well, they also say they want to compromise on common sense gun laws.
Yeah.
I mean, they are not – they don't take a hard line. They don't take a principled stance. They play the political game often. And yeah. They've done a lot of good work, so I'm not saying that they're all bad. I'm just saying they're no gun owners of America.
Yeah, yeah. GOA is good. And what I was thinking of was back when Obama was running for president, I was getting these things forwarded by email and in snail mail that said, did you know that when Obama was a senator, he voted against something that would help people who use guns in self-defense in their home in Illinois. See, in Illinois, there were two towns, Chicago and Oak Park, which in our movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Oak Park is where Sergeant Dan Banning, played by me, is from in his little hagiography biography that they do, his behind the gun documentary. And so people were sending out this thing talking about how in Oak Park in Chicago, it was illegal to own a handgun in your home. And that was overturned by the Supreme Court. And then they made it so if you jump through a bunch of hoops, they'll maybe let you have a handgun with, you know, one round in the mag or something like that. So they had this thing, but if you illegally had a gun in one of those two towns and some gang broke into your house and tried to rape your wife and murder your children and you shot them with your illegally owned gun, which happened in one case, they still arrest, they let the, you know, the guy, it was considered a clean shoot, legal self-defense, but the guy was still prosecuted for owning the gun he used to save his family's life. And wow. Somebody tried to propose a bill for a law in Illinois that would say, well, in that situation, we're not going to prosecute you for the gun. And Obama voted against it. Like, he's like, no, we still have to punish the guy who saves his family with the illegally.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was this thing that went out before about when Obama started talking about running of, you can't vote for this guy because he did this. Now, here's why this is interesting. I remember the good old days when that was the only bad thing we knew about Obama. Like, that was the reason not to vote for him. And that was a good reason. And, but that was it. That was all we knew about him. And it's like today, these days, like for the past 6 years, like every morning I get eight things in my email that he's done worse overnight since that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you step in a dog do and you go, ugh, Obama.
It's Obama's fault my toast is burnt.
It is. Well, yeah, because back then he was just some local. What was he, a state? He was a senator.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah. Did he skip the state level completely?
I don't know, man. Probably.
Okay.
I think the eight people who secretly run the world probably got him through that. Or maybe
did he vote against the state law if he wasn't in the state legislature?
He must have been. Yeah. Okay, he was. You're right. Yep, he was. I think it was for for the afternoon. You know, he came into politics in the morning, and by that afternoon he'd become a federal senator, probably.
Okay.
Because the eight people that run the world secretly just jumped him through 12 grades.
Oh, is that?
Yep.
You get to skip.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, I guess the point I was trying to make was, you know, as he gained more power, he did more horrible things because there was more horrible things for him to do because he had more control over more aspects of your life.
Yeah.
First, it was.
And we'll have more when we come back.
We will.
On the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Inoculation from indoctrination. 5 centuries after the first spaceflight, the stars remain beyond humanity's reach. So a mad scientist enlists the aid of a young technician, Nicole Orem, as they travel through the solar system, encountering the hazards of space and human treachery. Quantum Vibe, Volume 1, Nicole, collects the first 400 strips of the epic sci-fi webcomic series. Available now from the major online bookstores or direct from BigHeadPress.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati here in Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in bunker vision.
This is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. Yes.
But at least you know it's a bunker. So you just have to narrow it down from the list of bunkers in Wyoming.
Yeah, it's actually not a bunker. You know, one of our fans, Kyle Bennett, found a picture somehow. He was looking for something else on Google Skyview, and he found something in Wyoming that he posted and said was the location of my windowless bunker. It's really weird. It's like, it's kind of a manhole. Like, you know, a big metal manhole cover in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming. Yeah. Like literally, you know, in the middle of some federal land in the middle of nowhere. And it has like a Masonic looking symbol on the cover of it. And he said it was me.
I think it was like south of Lander near Shoshone National Forest, or do they call it Shoshone?
I don't know, Wyoming is so full of nothing. Not nothing, but just like lack of people and buildings for the most part. People who've never been here have no idea of the remoteness of this state. And this is part of why I live here. There are 500,000 people in this state, in the whole state, and it's giant. It's like the 10th largest state in America. It's huge. There's two cities that have about 52,000 people in them, Cheyenne and Casper, and the rest of the state, I mean, you can drive like 20 miles without seeing a house in a lot of it.
Yeah. Oh, more than 20 miles. Yeah. Between Casper and Riverton, there's just vast swaths of nothingness. You might see a few oil rigs every now and then.
Yeah. And this supposed bunker cover he found was like in the middle between two large areas of nothing, of nothingness, of no people. Yeah. And, you know, there are definitely
sheep. The definition of middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not really
nowhere
my bunker.
On one side and nowhere on the other side. And it was in the middle.
But I'm really not in a bunker, and it's not windowless. I started saying that because on our first show, because I was doing it from the basement at one point, and it is windowless down there because I boarded up the windows. And I just decided I didn't want to be living like a hermit. And I moved it all upstairs into a spare bedroom, and I can look out the window. There's pictures on some articles I did on Talkers Magazine about how to sound condition a room without removing its roomy charm. And you can see that there's actual windows in my windowless bunker. So it's a big lie, people. It's a big lie. But figuratively, I'm in a windowless bunker, which basically just means I want to be left alone.
Ah, okay. So I had some clarification on the Iran hostage crisis. The actual big hostage crisis, the embassy hostage crisis, where people were held for 444 days, ended, according to Wiki, the exact moment when Ronald Reagan completed his 20-minute inaugural address on January 20th, 1981. And Wiki brings forth the theory that it was because they had promised to unfreeze assets, gold assets that were held in Western banks that Iran needed to fight Iraq, which was invading them at the time.
Yeah, and they probably basically did that to buy goodwill for Reagan, because the way it looked was like, oh, they'll take American hostages and hold them forever when that peanut farmer Democrat is president. But now that Cowboy Ronnie's come to town, they're quivering in their boots. And they're going to release them. And it was more like, no, they just sold them to Reagan.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess it was their – I guess it's not never really their money since they're a government. But it was money that the government assumed it was the government's money.
We three kings be stealing the gold.
Yeah,
yeah, I watched that last night. That's good, man.
And then, of course, Reagan sold weapons apparently through Israel, but I mean, it was obviously an American foreign policy thing. Sold weapons to Iran and Iraq and watched them go at each other's throats for 10 years. Over a million people died, according to some estimates, in that war.
Well, what about Charlie Wilson when he basically armed the Muj, who turned into the Taliban, or part of them did?
Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda.
They're separate from
Taliban. I'm sorry, and most Americans don't know the difference, and that confuses me, and I get them mixed up. But, when was it? Who was the president then with Charlie Wilson?
I assume that was Reagan.
I think it was. Yeah, so
because Reagan had those guys, he had the Mujahideen fighters over at the White House, like for dinner. And
And he called them the founding.
About how they were freedom fighters.
Yeah, he called them compared them to America's founding fathers. Yeah, so that's another
some punk record where they have a video and audio clip of that.
I don't know. Did punk records have videos on them?
Oh man, there was some.
That was analog days, man.
There's some pop culture thing where that's at the end, and I can't recall it now. But I mean, that's present in people's minds, even in the 90s and the 80s. That this is what you're doing. You're giving money and weapons to these guys. They're gonna they're going to use that, you know, at some point against us. Keep that in mind as Obama is selling weapons to Al-Qaeda fighters in Syria. And we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends in just a bit.
With more on how Reagan created hardcore punk rock.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That's the punk rock tune that Michael made before the jump to the market. He said Ronald Reagan invented punk rock. Back it up.
Well, that was a song called Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector that I did sort of in the style of Minor Threat and Dead Kennedys, which were two of my favorite bands back then. Now, hardcore punk rock is from the 80s. It's not punk rock's from the 70s, but hardcore punk rock is that really kind of angry, upbeat, you know, everybody chanting together on the choruses all together, even if they can't sing, and lots of energy. And, you know, you'll play anywhere and you don't care and you don't care about the money and you just want to play. And it kind of took off around the time Reagan was taking off. And a lot of the bands, records, songs, everything, band names were anti-Reagan. That was the thing. It was like Reagan was the ultimate symbol of what's wrong with the government. Like, there was a band called Naked Reagan. There was a band called Reagan Youth. You know, a lot of songs about Reagan. There was a band called Jody Foster's Army, which is a reference to the guy who shot Reagan because he said, you know, he was hearing voices telling him that Jody Foster would marry him. You know, Jody Foster was a child and he wanted to marry her because of her performance in the movie Taxi Driver as a lady of the night. And I first really got into punk rock. I mean, I'd heard it when I was living in upstate New York. Then I moved to D.C. when I ran away from home at 18, like a couple weeks after I graduated. I was just like, man, I'm out of here. And my mom's like,
I don't know if that's running away. That's moving out.
My mom's like, okay. But I felt like I was running away. And I went to D.C. and I was homeless for a while. And I was homeless and working. That's how like dedicated I was to my vision of making it in punk rock. And I started a band called The Day I Lost My Virginity, which got on a compilation tape, and that was the first time I was on something. That was like my big thing. I was on this thing that was distributed, and I felt like I'd arrived, and it was great. And I was like living in a rat-infested factory in Georgetown, Washington, D.C., and I'd like crawl, you know, I had an alarm clock, and I was homeless, and I'd get out, and I'd like put my tie on in the rearview mirror of a car, and then go into work and sell sandwiches at a health food store called Naturally Yours, which is still there, if you want to go there. That's where I went. And that was the punk rock thing to do. Like Ian MacKay from Minor Threat and Henry Rollins from Black Flag worked together at the Haagen-Dazs ice cream store up the street. And it was just one big happy punk family. Although I was kind of an outsider. So anyway, Reagan, man. Yeah, I went to this thing called Rock Against Reagan. It was a big punk rock 2-day festival on the Washington Mall. And July 4th, 1984. Talk about like the Orwellian punk rock day. Like it was 1984 and it was July 4th, And all these punk bands were playing with generators on a stage. And I remember, like, the park police told all the bands that they had to not play during the fireworks. And this band, MDC, which stood for Millions of Dead Cops, was going to go on at sunset. And they were like, no, surround the generators. And all these punk rockers surrounded the generators like an army and stood off, like, and didn't let the park police shut the show down. That was great.
Wow.
Man. That was amazing to me. Now the park police...
And the park police didn't shut it down.
Right,
huh?
They didn't. And they're like 5,000 people there, man, and a bunch of, like...
Yeah, nowadays they'd run them over with a bear cat.
Yeah, they would. But that was the good old punk rock days when you could yell at the government and it felt right and they didn't generally kill you for it. And that's kind of where I got my attitude that I have now. And that's why we hate Obama, but we hate Reagan too. And we don't like that he's hagiography-eyed. He said some great things that made him sound like an anarchist, but
it was just talk.
He said the worst words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, which sounds like a punk rock anarchist button.
But then he sent people from the government to try to, quote, help people and obviously did nothing but harm society as a whole and the people they were apparently trying to help. And it still continues to this day, the legend of Reagan as an evil force in the 80s. Kendrick Lamar's album Section 80 is pretty much about that. You know, there's skits that go through it. And one of the skits is, you know, they're all around a campfire talking and there's like a Black Panther guy talking about things, and he says, you know, I want to talk about these messed up kids from the Reagan era, these people with nothing but hate and aggression in their eyes, and basically points, you know, the album to the drug war, the fact that people were killing each other over this stuff, and there was a culture of dependency as well, and these are all the government turning ghetto LA into a government modified environment, an Indian reservation.
NWA came up during the Reagan years too. I mean, Reagan invented the need for hardcore punk rock, and he also invented, you know, gangster hip hop or political conscious gangster hip hop. You know,
yeah, both ends of it actually. Yeah,
yeah.
NWA all the way to Common to Kanye, all that.
So here's the problem with all that in our segue. Is that all those people who were anti-Reagan, you know, the dead Kennedys, millions of dead cops, like all those people, all those punk rockers, NOFX, like basically they didn't get it that Obama is the same thing. And a lot of them helped. They not only voted for Obama and backed him, but helped him get elected. And I'm like, it's the same government, man. It's the same people. And this guy, Fat Mike from this band, NOFX, started this thing called Punk Voter back in the day, which was like, punk the vote, man. Get these Republicans out and get the good Democrats in. And it's the same thing. So we just watched this movie called The Other F Word. And the F word in this movie is fatherhood or family. Basically, it's a documentary about, you know, punk rockers my age, 45 to 50, who are fathers now and families and live in the suburbs, but they still play in punk bands. And I told Nima he should watch this movie. You can watch it on Netflix streaming. It's called The Other F Word. And what were your reflections of it as someone who's a rebel and about to become a father?
Well, here's the thing that I took away. They talk that the first act is all about, you know, how punk started and how it was about anarchy and doing what you want and all this. And then in the middle, it's all about, well, it's time to come of age. I got a family. I need steady income. I need to be responsible. But here's the thing that I really thought both their philosophy and the film was lacking. It's that anarchism in their punk days, the I'll do what I want, it wasn't principled. It was just rebellion for rebellion's sake.
Yeah, one of the guys in there says, I'm really glad I got it out of my system breaking stuff back in the day, because now at my age, they'd call me a terrorist. And I'm thinking, like, you broke stuff? Like, see, people confuse that with rebellion. It's just violence, man. We don't advocate breaking things, even if they're bad things. You know, our thing, I was always influenced by the conscious punk rock, like Ian MacKaye, Minor Threat, Fugazi. His whole thing was like, we don't want to burn down the major labels. We want to make our own independent labels that are so cool.
Right.
And they, it wasn't even about like, we want to destroy the, you know, they weren't even trying to replace the, like, eliminate the major labels. They wanted to be a parallel, but different, almost like separate, but more than equal. That's a bad analogy, but they wanted to be something that was so cool that you'd do that instead of the major labels. And they still are, like Fugazi. I mean, that label Discord has been around for like 30 years almost, and there are people who will buy everything that comes out on that label without hearing it, because they know it's a known factor of goodness, you know.
Right. But you know, seeing, watching the movie, the other F word, which is fatherhood,
great name.
I realized that these punk rockers, you know, they think that growing up and becoming responsible means, at least some of them, means doing things that other people do within the system and dropping the rebellion. I think instead, you can keep your rebellion if it's based on principle, like the non-aggression principle, and non-aggression principle 2.0, where you don't accept the aggression. And you can do that mentally or philosophically. I'm not saying you need to fight back violently against the state's aggression, but you need to realize that it's not wrong. You're not paying your taxes now because it's the right thing to do. You're paying it because you're forced to, and you don't want to go to jail and leave your family without food, but at the same time you realize that it is a bad system. You can maintain your rebellion on a philosophical level without keeping all the angsty youth break stuff aspects of it.
Yeah, which I didn't think was angsty, and I did have a problem with that movie only in the same way that I have a problem with all punk rock movies that I don't make. You should watch my movie, DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. It's a good one. But most punk rock punkumentaries, and mine was one of the first one. It came out in 2001, and there have been a whole slate of them coming out. And it's good. It's a good thing. I'm not saying I invented punk rock documentaries. There were people making them on film before I did. I made one of the first digital ones, DV ones, but which really frees you up, because somebody once said, somebody said this in the 60s, filmmaking will only truly become an art when the materials for it become as inexpensive as pencil and paper. And that was a brilliant thing to say in the 60s, back when it cost thousands of dollars to even make an independent movie. And it has come to pass, because everyone has a phone anyway, so you have a video camera, and there's stuff on YouTube that's like edited with, you know, freeware or pirated software that's good stuff, that's like feature length, that's shot on cameras that people didn't have to pay for because they come with their cell phones. So that has come to pass. And that's kind of true of every art form. And audio stuff isn't even really there yet, because for some reason, like, the mics aren't good enough in cell phones yet, which is a pet peeve of mine. But if you want to go to our website, creamyradioaudio.com, we have tons of tips on how to make caviar sound on a cat food budget. And that's, I've always been about seizing the means of production, not in a communist sense, but in a sense of like, I have great visions, I have good ideas, I want to get my stuff out there. And I was always into getting on the bandwagon before it started of, you know, making punk rock records, then making DVDs, then making CDs, then making, you know, putting MP3s on the internet. I didn't invent any of that, but I was on it as soon as it could be done, before everyone I knew was on it.
Right.
And
the philosophy of just doing it rather than spending your time flying out to LA to try to beg people to help you do it.
Yeah. I mean, an example is like, I went to LA and went and made movies, and I made a documentary that's narrated by Robert Downey Jr. and has international distribution and got flown around to, you know, film festivals in France and Prague and made money at it and make a living at it. And I did that. I was in LA for 5 years, and those 5 years that I was there, I knew people who like came out to be screenwriters or filmmakers and spent all their time going to parties and networking. And at the end of the 5 years, I had a movie, and they went back to Ohio with their tail between their legs and went and moved in back in with their parents, because they'd been trying to bet it on somebody picking them rather than them doing it themselves, you know?
Well, and the picking game is always political. The people who are going to get picked are either the people who have the right connections through family or friends, or the people that are saying the message that the moneyed interests want to put forward. So if you want to put forth some kind of pure message, or message that's non-violent, you know, anti-state, that's going to be hard to do in the system. Fiend-tastic.
But thankfully, Genesis Communications Network let us be picked, and it's a good thing. And we'll be back with more on the radio after this trip to the market. on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by The Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out CreamyRadioAudio.com. That's CreamyRadioAudio.com.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. I'm Nima Vedati. We've also got Michael W. Dean. And Michael, you had some mad science to drop.
Yeah, it's the first day of fall, and I'm loving it. Happy autumn.
Ah, that actually is science, because it really is the first day of fall, isn't it? Oh, okay, yeah. Fair enough. I was thinking of metaphorical science.
Well, I'm going somewhere with this. There's a certain thing about this time of year, right around this week, where the light is a certain way, and it reminds me of when my band Bomb, a band I used to be in, yes, I was in a band called Bomb, back in the day when we first went to Europe, the only time we went to Europe, I went there later with films, but Bomb went to Europe in 91 in the fall, and we were there like this week, and I remember like being in Germany for the first time ever and walking down a street in Schweinfurt, Germany, and looking at the sun and the trees and at the world looked exactly like it does right now this week, but it was in Germany and I was like there with my band and I was thinking about unlimited possibilities and the future and media and reaching the world and how cool it was. And it just seemed, it seemed religious to me. And there's something about the first day of fall, give or take a day in America, that looks the same to me and reminds me of that and takes me back there. And I like that a lot. It's a cool thing, man.
It is strange how seasons do elicit feelings and reminiscence in people. And it's very strong feelings.
So the Fiends like to elicit a response. And we're not one of those left-right, left or right talk shows where we scream at people because the other side, because all that is saying, you're spending the government gun-pointed money. And when we say that, we mean all money that government spend is collected and used and directed at the point of a gun, the threat of a gun. That's what they'll do. They will shoot you if you don't pay your taxes.
Right. And Democrats and Republicans are two gangs of thieves deciding what to do with the loot.
Yeah.
We say let's get rid of the looting at the beginning, and then you won't even then all the complaining about how the loot gets spent will be irrelevant.
Yeah, and I want to clarify something that we said as when we were going out to break before the commercials, before we went to the market, you said something about like, you know, if you want to have an anti-state radio show, it's kind of hard to do. And I want to clarify the term anti-state because that's a loaded term and it sounds violent and scary and un-American, and we're anything but. We love living in America. We are not violent. And what we mean by that is we're talking about how Discord Records, this punk rock label that's run for about 30 years, is really cool because they didn't, a lot of the punkers back then were like, I want to smash the major record companies. And if, and my, and Fugazi and Minor Threat and, those bands, like Discord Records, they were just like, no, we just want to have an alternative that's cooler because that other stuff's boring and it costs too much money. And we're going to make cool stuff and sell it cheap and make a profit and be able to give healthcare to our employees, even though they weren't required to by law because they had so few employees. It was like the greatest place to work, man. You could leave and go on tour with your band for 3 months and come back and still have a job and health insurance. And that's great. And that's how they ran it. And there, I talked to Ian many times about this, and his thing was like, I don't want to smash the major record labels. I think they're boring and I want to have something else. And we would like to have something else than government organizing all aspects of human behavior more and more every day. We would like to have an alternative to that. I don't want to smash the state. I want the state to go somewhere else and leave me alone. And I don't want to have to get out of America to do that. I want to live in my beautiful town and my beautiful house with my beautiful wife right here in Casper, Wyoming, and just be left alone, man. And that's what everyone complains about. Like, there's so much complaining about the government right now from the left and the right. And all people complain about is the other side is trying to make me do something I don't want to do. And that's a valid complaint, but you're not going to get there through politics, man. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, exactly. It's because bullying. The nature of the state is that everybody must do the same thing always. And if you don't do the thing that that other people want you to do, then you face the penalty of the quote law. I put quotes around it because I don't think that government edicts from a legislature is true law at all. I think it's nothing but busybodying, you know.
Read this quote from Edward Abbey that Jacob sent us. This is from before 1989, because he died in 89. We'll read it when we get back. It's
we've got enough time.
Go ahead.
We've got a longer send out. So Edward Abbey said, government, if you refuse to pay unjust taxes, your property will be confiscated. If you attempt to defend your property, you will be arrested. If you resist arrest, you will be clubbed. If you defend yourself against clubbing, you will be shot dead. These procedures are known as the rule of law.
Yep, and that's what we call the aggression principle, and that's what runs all government everywhere in every nation of the world throughout history. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends after we go to the legitimate market.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
All right, welcome back, Freedom Fiends. I'm Nima Vedati. This is hour two of our live talk radio show. We've also got Michael W. Dean on the other end of the intertubes.
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, you're waiting. Okay, I'll say it. I am broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America.
Does sound like a mouthful. All right. So I wanted to say thank you all, you fiends, who put in your 2 cents about a gun protection solution to keep my little tiny baby Lillian, once she's arrived, from grabbing my gat. I think what I'm going to go for, I would like to thank Tom Dank, who's a fiend fan, and also Carlos Powell for confirming my bias for these V-Line products. I guess it's called V-Line Deskmate. And they are not electronic. They have 5 buttons. They're mechanical, so you don't have to worry about a battery. They say they're top quality mechanical elements in there, so you just make your code and enter it as appropriate, and it pops open, and it's not vulnerable to batteries shorting out or EMPs or anything like that. As long as the mechanical things work, you're going to be able to reach your home defense tool as appropriate.
How much are they, and are they on your baby list, registered with Amazon?
I think we were going to go and just get it ourselves and not put it on the Amazon wish list. The one we're looking at on Amazon is $174.
That's doable.
That's totally doable. You see, here's the thing that bugs me, though, and you see this with a lot of gun-type products, is the company doesn't sell it direct. You have to go to their website. You can look at all the products and read the descriptions. It's like, oh, yay. But then you got to find a place to buy it. And that always bugs me. Is that something specific to gun products?
No.
Is there a reason for that?
That's true with a lot of things. Sure, microphones are an example.
Yeah. Audio gears that, too. And I guess I never understood that.
It's because people who make stuff generally want to concentrate on making stuff and not selling stuff. And people that sell stuff, I never understood the thing of like people saying, oh, you sold out, you have distribution for your movie or whatever. And I'm like, no, man. And you generally, with exceptions, there are exceptions. There are small companies that believe in what they're doing and do a good job selling it. But my experience has been the major corporations don't go out of business owing you money. So I've always gone with making the art and the world changing media in my home and then bringing it to Moses on the Mountain, who will sell it, and finding the person who they don't care whether they're selling, the best movie ever made or soap or widgets. They just know how to sell. And that's the people I usually like doing business with.
Modern capitalist division of labor. Okay. I get it now. Yeah. Well, like Walt and Jesse in Breaking Bad, they try a few times to sell it on their own and it never works out because that's not what they're good at. They're good at cooking. And then they have to constantly be searching for somebody to buy in bulk and be able to distribute it. So, okay.
But Jesse's really not. Oh, I want to give out the call-in number if we're taking calls now. The call-in number is where is it? We have it?
I don't know. I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
It was in my pigeon from yesterday. So we'll give it out once we find it.
I got it. But it's 1-8, well, 1 is, the prefix on most phones to dial, but it's 855-660-4261. That's 855-660-4261 in America is the Fiend's call-in number. So we're talking about Breaking Bad. There's only 2 episodes left ever. I'm kind of wondering, did Walt really need Jesse? I mean, Jesse flunked his chemistry class, and he was able to be trained to do it, but then again, so was Todd, I mean, I think he just needed him not just to serve the story, but kind of as a foil to his personality, so he's not just talking to himself while he's going mad.
Maybe, but I've been watching the earlier episodes to get my in-between week fix, since the new episodes are obviously coming out Sundays, and I'm actually watching them as they come out, so I need something to fill the gaps. And he does need Jesse at the beginning because he needs somebody who's been in that world because he's completely clueless. In fact, the episode I just watched, Jesse says, "You need me more than I need you." And that's probably some hyperbole going on there. But I think Walt did need Jesse, especially in the early stages, because Walt knew nothing about the drug world. Not the first thing. He needed a liaison, somebody who's at least had some experience with that stuff.
Yep, and we're going to go to the phones in a minute here. We're getting calls on the Freedom Fiends. After I say that Breaking Bad is playing every episode of every season in sequence starting this coming Wednesday, timing it so the second to last one rolls into the final last one being played for the first time. And I'm wondering if there's anybody who out there who's thinking it's a good idea to do a bunch of crystal meth and stay up for 4 days and watch that.
To really get the experience.
Yeah, and
maybe.
if you're doing that, don't call in because you will sound insane to me and I don't want to talk to you. So we're gonna take a call here, though. We got Howie calling from Pennsylvania. Howie.
Hey,
you're on.
Michael,
hey.
And Nima.
What's up, Howie?
How's it going?
How are you listening to us?
I listen a lot. I listen mostly on Stitcher, but this is the first time I've heard your show live. I've been listening for like a few months now, and I really, I'm really enjoying your show, and I'm just like glad I've connected with you guys. And
Cool.
I'm still like a newbie. Like, I don't really know a lot about you, but the more I hear you talk, it's very interesting.
Well, it's not about us. It's not about us. It's really about, oh, can you turn down your radio or your internet there? We're getting a little echo.
You're telling me that. I don't know. I'm just calling on myself. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Is it bad?
It's the voices in your head. So it's not really, we're complimented when people like what we have to say, but for us, it's more about what we're saying. What do you have on your mind today about what we say?
I was going to congratulate Nemo about the birth of his child, and I think it's really cool how he's like approaching it in like such a responsible manner. But I kind of agree with you, Michael, that for right now, while she's an infant, he really doesn't have to worry about having to secure his weapon. If he's really that worried about it, if he keeps it on him in the holster at all times when he's at home, and that's not that bad of an idea to do, because why having a weapon in a drawer if somebody comes to your front door and tries to rob you, what good is that? But also what Michael brought up was that like a 38 Smith & Wesson 442, there's no way an infant is going to be able to pull that hammer back. It's a very hard hammer pull. And even there's any kind of weapon like a shotgun, there's no way a little girl is going to, or I mean a little kid is going to, baby is going to be able to pump that and cycle around into the first chamber. So
here's what I think. Here's what I think, though. That's absolutely true. But I don't think you could know the day your kid would be strong enough to cock a weapon. And
exactly.
I think it makes sense to start now having it in a safe when you're asleep.
And also, the likelihood Nima's family is going to have other children in the house if there's other, you know, with person with a family.
Cousins and stuff,
people. Yeah, and if Nima's not there, so yeah, he should keep his weapons definitely secured and out of any threat of a child finding him. So that's really cool, and I really appreciate that you going about that, you know, responsible. And, yeah, you know, your wife will feel, or your whoever you're with, your child's mother will feel much more secure, because people do fear weapons, even though they're really just tools, really. I mean,
right, exactly. And that's the real motivation, is they say a happy wife, a happy life. And I can't claim all the credit for being a responsible adult. It's mostly her having civilized me. You know, Boston Tea Party says that women civilize men. And I think that's definitely true with our relationship. And she brings up the point that, yeah, it might not be that big of a deal when the baby can't move because she's an infant and she's laying in a bassinet all day or in the arms of my wife. But if we don't take care of it now, we might forget, and there might be that one day when the baby is old enough to do something dangerous. And so we might as well take care of all that now rather than later.
And don't just think about guns. I mean, the fact that a gun is a tool brings up the fact that there's a lot of other things in a house that could be used by a baby or a toddler to hurt some. I mean, a power drill. If a kid could plug in a power drill, they could, even if they didn't have the strength to cock a gun, they could probably at one or one and a half or two plug in a power drill and turn it on. You know, you got to secure everything.
Before I get cut off, and I don't, you know, I really don't want to seem like I'm blowing smoke at you guys, but I like the show, and I was looking at your Facebook or your webpage, and I don't see a donate button. I bought your book about addiction and forward to getting it, but
cool.
I couldn't find it. I want to kick up like a, you know, I like your show, and I just
thanks.
Want a few bucks.
There's a donate button at the bottom of every post. There's a spinning coin. Is that showing up on your end?
Oh, I'll look for it. I want to email you about some stuff, but you know what? I'm glad you let me call in, and thanks for taking my call. You guys are both very thoughtful cats. So,
excellent.
You know, I like your talk radio, and it's good. So I'm going to keep listening, and you know, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you for your call, Howard.
Good luck with your wife's pregnancy or whoever. But
thanks, man.
Take care.
We appreciate it.
Excellent.
Peace.
Take care. All right, that was nice. That was nice.
Yeah, it's always fun to take those calls.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite kind of calls.
That's not a kind of call you hear a lot on talk radio. Generally, calls on talk radio are, I think you're un-American, or I think I agree with you that the president is horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we think all the presidents are horrible in every nation throughout history.
you always say, you know, I'm sick of talking about politics and we should just talk about, you know, personal stuff in your life. And us talking and having this discussion about gun safes and children, it's gotten some of the biggest response of anything we've ever talked about. And I think that's because people get sick of hearing things in the abstract. And Stefan Molyneux brings this up all the time, that you can complain and complain and complain about the Federal Reserve or American foreign policy, but what can you really do as an individual citizen of the United States? It's not like you can go to Ben Bernanke and say, hey, come on, guy. It's not like you can go to Barack Obama and say, man, maybe you should stop killing all these kids. They're not going to listen, and you're not going to get an audience with them in the first place. But the changes you can make are changes in your own life, in your own home, in your own family. And people like things that they can do. People like discussions about things that they can actually do action towards, you know. So I think that's why.
I like Stefan Molyneux a lot, but I also think you couldn't go to him and get useful advice on what gun safe to buy for your kid. Even though he has an answer for everything for parenting, I don't think he'd be the guy to ask for that because he's not a gun guy.
That's true.
I like that Liberty Media has gotten to the point where there's enough choice that, first of all, I maintain that no one person can harm liberty. And people worry about that. Like, oh, what he said harms liberty. And it's like, I look at it as too strong to for one person to harm it. And the other thing is, there's a lot of people who have different strengths and things. You can go to Stefan for one thing, us for another thing, Free Talk Live for another thing. It's all good, man. It's a big, big thing now. It's good. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yep. It's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. That's what it is. I'm Nima Vadavi. We've got Michael W. Dean. Man, shorter segment here, so let's get right into the meat of it. I want to continue on the gun safe discussion a tiny bit. My wife, in her research for what was a good solution, ran across quite a few gun folk forums where people were adamantly anti-gun safe. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Michael. Why do you think there is sort of an animosity towards using a gun safe?
Well, do you have an answer or you want me to conjecture? I have ideas, but do you know the answer?
I was thinking it probably comes from people who think that, well, you need to have your gun in as close a proximity, as ready to go as possible in case something happens. And a gun safe is another block or roadblock in the chain to your adequate self-defense, is where I would think that that feeling comes from.
Well, I'm adamantly against laws requiring a gun to be in a safe. I don't even know if those exist, but they might. I think they might exist in kind of a bureaucratic way where if the county came in your home and your gun wasn't in a safe and you had children, they might take your kids away because of it. It might not be a written law. But, you know, bureaucrats have legislative powers now and judicial and, you know, executive in the form of their police executioner. And they can do it all. They can just write stuff down on paper and then take things away from you like your children. But I can, yeah, I can definitely think I do not keep guns in a safe, you know, in the house when I'm home. I keep them out. I keep one not in the chamber when I sleep. And it's not like I'm worried about sleep shooting. It's just if I have to get up and deal with a noise or the thought that someone is in the house,
I want your arms, your hands aren't functioning correctly, and you're kind of sleepy in your eyes. Yeah,
I think that cocking a gun would kind of wake me up and focus me, and it would keep me from shooting. I mean, I would never accidentally shoot my wife. You know, I know her in the house, and I would know her from someone else in the house. But you know, and I know where she is in at night when I wake up. I wake up pretty. Mm-hmm. I sleep really soundly. But wake up really easily. It's kind of I don't know if that's soundly. I sleep deeply and wake up quickly at any sound, any sound that shouldn't be there. You know,
right.
Also, well, my cats kind of act like guard cats. Like if there's some, you know, like when someone comes in the yard, the cats run around and they generally sleep all night.
Huh.
So
they run around.
The one time someone tried to break into our house in California while we were home, which is why we ended up buying guns. I had headphones on. And was alerted because the cats were running. They like the cats alerted me that they heard someone trying to like pry a window open quietly in the other room.
Huh. See, my wife's thing about the whole discussion was it felt like it was coming from people who don't have kids in the house trying to tell other people who have different situations what's going on. And the other thing being that you know, you don't have people who are anti those little plugs that go on the socket. You don't have people who are anti cabinet locks to keep kids from getting under the sink and drinking the Drano. You don't really see that kind of a phenomenon. You really only see it with regard to gun safes when it comes to childproofing your house.
Well, I'm sure that the anti-gun ants in the world probably see that as proof that gun owners are insane, but I see it as proof that when seconds count, a second delay can kill you. You know, if someone kicks in your door, generally with home invasions, speed is the thing. The same thing with cops home invade you. You know, they throw a flashbang in. When gangs home invade a house and tie people up and rape the wife and, you know, slash the husband and steal everything and leave, which happens. I mean, you hear about it all the time and people are like, it's horrible. Something must be done. We need more police. And I'm thinking like, it's horrible, man. Those people should have had a gun.
Yeah.
If someone kicks in your door, usually when they do home invasions, they come in at two points at once. They come in like the front door and the back window, and they're yelling, police on the ground, you know, and most people, most good law abiding people who've never thought this through. If someone kicks in their door and yells police, they're going to put their hands up, you know?
Right. Because they're conditioned, and the criminals who are not in the anointed criminal class, i.e., the government criminal class, they know that conditioning exists and they use it to their advantage.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Here's the thing about gun culture is it's growing so much that I feel like there's way more room for people who are different types of gun owners. It's no longer the people who are in their 40s and 50s who are maybe retired and their kids have left the house. You know, it's young urban professionals. It's young active people. One of the other things I'd always wanted, well, you know what? We'll go ahead and save it and leave you with a cliffhanger, and we'll be back with this after our trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, not your dad's talk radio.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Uh-huh. It's the Freedom Fiends. That's me, Nima Vadati, and Michael Dean as well. How you doing, Mr. Dean?
I'm good. I'm broadcasting from a windowless bunker.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of, I was watching Breaking Bad the other day. In one of the episodes, they're coming into Jesse's new house that he's renting from the lady who becomes his girlfriend later. And when Badger walks in, he goes, "Oh, there's an echo. Holla, holla, holla."
Yep, yep. Yeah, so I got one more thing about safes. Then I want to move on to Breaking Bad and other things. Breaking Bad and children and its effect on children and how we need to protect the children from Breaking Bad. Yeah, if you get a gun safe, Mama Liberty pointed this out, and I also thought about this independently. You really should practice with it. You should practice with it as much as you'd practice pulling a gun out of a holster and firing it.
Yeah.
And assessing a target, because it is going to add a few seconds at least when someone smashes in your door to how soon you are able to defend yourself. And right. That could be 60 seconds if you don't practice and have to find a flashlight, in which case you'll probably be murdered. Or it could be about 2 seconds, you know, if you really practice it, have a flashlight next to it, always have a flashlight in the same place. And somebody should make one that has glow-in-the-dark radium buttons on it. Although radium can – I don't know. I have tritium sights on my Glock. They glow for about 10 years. They've got a tiny bit of radioactive gas in a little tube and, allow you to sight in almost near total darkness.
Doesn't that mean you have breakout capability to make a nuclear weapon?
No. No. There's more radium. There's more radioactive material in the average smoke alarm than there is in my gun sights.
That's funny.
Yep.
Yeah, I totally get that. Muscle memory, and definitely plan on doing that. So I appreciate that as well.
So speaking of Breaking Bad and children, there's a this is kind of an article from a few weeks ago, but we didn't discuss it, and it's kind of funny. Outrage as toy company creates crystal meth lab for children with Breaking Bad play sets. Now, it's not an actual crystal meth lab. It's a, you know, activity set for children based on the show Breaking Bad.
Right, and it looks like a Lego play set. I think it's a company that also Lego contracts some other stuff too. I'm not 100% sure on that.
It's not Lego.
It's not licensed by Lego, but it's the same type of stuff.
No, I think it's brick, man. It's Citizen Brick. It's not Lego. Lego refused to sanction or endorse the toy, which is made by independent company Citizen Brick.
Right, it's Lego style, but doesn't Citizen Brick also make stuff for Lego? Lego doesn't make everything that Lego makes.
I don't know. I think this is a different system than Lego. I'm looking at it, and it's different type of connectivity. I think it's a competitor. But anyway, we could argue about that until the cows come home, but I'd rather just kind of talk about this toy. What do you think about this toy, Nima? Will you be getting one for young Lily?
I might.
probably the price would be – it's kind of pricey, which is really like – I don't think it's a toy for children. I think it's a toy for adults who like the show in the same way that, you know, all the stuff in the comic book stores isn't – you go in there, it's not kids buying it. It's like 30-year-old computer nerds who have no girlfriend and too much money to spend – buy expensive Star Trek and Star Wars play toy things.
Right, right. And, you know, people say, oh, there might need to be a law about this or complain that this shouldn't be sold. Well, the market took care of it because Lego refused to license it. I think Citizen Brick did try to pitch it to Lego. Lego said no. So I think that's the thing is Lego's not going to put their name on it. And Citizen Brick, obviously the price point and the concept of it, it's intended for fanboys. It's not intended that little Lily will get this from Grandpa on Christmas and then decide she wants to go into meth production when she grows up. I think that's a non-issue.
And it's less offensive to me than the I think it is. It might be Lego. There's a toy set like this that is a junior TSA kit thing. It's basically like it comes with like a little porno scanner and little guys with guns, and you can pretend being the junior Stasi and feeling people up and feeling grandma up and, you know, oppressing people as they get on an airplane. That's offensive to me. This isn't.
Yeah, and much less people complain about things like toy soldiers or tanks or toy aircraft carriers or battleships or weapons of war.
Are there toy Bearcats yet?
There might be toy Bearcats. We should look that up. It wouldn't surprise me. But kids have always played with stuff that you wouldn't think of as the paragon of morality. So I don't understand why it would upset people so much. I mean, yeah, it's illegal to manufacture meth, according to the government, but it's immoral to slaughter and massacre people like happens in wars, and nobody complains about war playsets.
Yeah, and I don't even think that this is an authorized thing. I don't think it's authorized by the owners of the Breaking Bad
film. I don't think so.
Because the characters' names, like, they're not Walt and Hank and Gustavo. Their names are chemistry enthusiasts. World's best grandpa is Mike Ehrentraub, and Gustavo's name is Chicken Enthusiast.
Chicken Enthusiast, yeah. And it's called the Super Lab playset, not the Breaking Bad playset.
Yeah.
But they have periodic table S and P as the beginning of the letters, just like Breaking Bad has.
That was a brilliant thing on the part of Breaking Bad. That stylization so became, you know, the branding of the show.
Right, right. And, you know, Anthony Gregory brought up a good post about Breaking Bad on Facebook the other day that there are still some people trying to justify Walt's actions rather than basking in the glory of the character that's been created by Vince Gilligan. And I think that that's the distinction we were reaching for in previous episodes is you can still be amazed by Walt without being on Walt's team or saying that Walt's doing the right thing, but you can still be amazed by how well the character is portrayed, and you know what I'm saying. It's the art, but you don't have to justify his actions morally at all.
Yeah, I'm looking at the citizenbrick.com website. I can't tell what their relationship to Lego is because, first of all, there's no Wikipedia page for them. It says on their site, Lego is a registered trademark of Lego Corporation. Oh, and Lego Group does not sponsor, endorse, or authorize this site. So it looks to me like it's a competitor.
It's a competitor. Okay.
And so I don't even know if they went to Lego or not with the Breaking Bad play kit. It says they don't endorse or sanction it. That might just be a disclaimer on the Citizen Brick website.
I see. Okay, fair enough. But either way, it looks like Lego. I mean, I could see a little kid looking at it and thinking it's Lego or wanting it because it's so similar to Lego. The characters, the Lego bots, I guess you can't call them that, but the little characters
the
look
brick
just
bots.
Like little Lego
brick
characters.
Bots.
Brick bots.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Comes complete
Citizen
with
brick.
Protective masks, drug paraphernalia, figurines, and a version of the car from the show. Oh, the car? What is that? The Aztec?
Or is it the Tercel wagon that Jesse gets after his Monte Carlo is taken by the DEA?
Yeah, I think that the Aztec was discontinued, and I've heard that they're actually selling for a lot now as used cars because for some reason people want to drive what Walter White drives.
Well, somebody was selling a Tercel wagon, and they claimed it was actually used in the shooting of the show. And I had my eye on it. I was like, man, I should drive down to that New Mexico dealership and see if I can get that. But I'm sure a lot of other people – because I really like the way the Tercel wagons look too. They're,
really?
They got that 80s boxy look.
50s.
That, for some reason, I dig it. No, it's the 80s, man.
You know, Ben Stone said that, it's the 80s trying to look like the old 50s station wagons. If you, you're saying I'm wrong because you don't know what a 50s station wagon looks like, but they do. Those are kind of trying to recreate the old original first. It was kind of the first SUV. It was the first, like, family vehicle made for people who want to spend the summer driving around the country solving mysteries. And speaking of people driving around the country solving mysteries, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, told me that right after Breaking Bad came out, he got pulled over in his Winnebago-type wagon while out camping and driving around the country solving mysteries with his wife by a bunch of state police somewhere who were acting like they thought because of that movie that anyone who didn't look normal and was driving a Winnebago was probably driving a mobile meth lab. And they, like, pulled him over, detained him, found some reason to bring drug dogs out, found nothing, and left. Last time I had drug dogs go through something of mine, it was with my band Bomb driving from Canada into America at Detroit in like 1990. And they detained us for like an hour while they got the drug dogs from the airport and let him go through the car, and they didn't find any drugs, but they ate the cookies my mother made for me that we just picked up in upstate New York. Yeah.
Lousy dogs. Drug Hopefully the puppies. Chocolate chips made him sick. No, I don't want that to happen.
I know,
yeah, like I've said before, it's not the dog's fault, you know, and it's just really sad that those dogs are exploited by the state. How about you think about that, you animal rights people? The state exploits animals and people, you know.
Yeah. You know, if you want a tiny inkling into how much money of yours is wasted in the drug war, you, the listener, go find one of those websites that's like business to police only. They only sell to police, but they do have websites. I'm not going to name them, but they're pretty easy to find with a Google search of the companies that outfit drug task forces. And I mean, just the amount that they spend on dog supplies is more than, you know, anybody listening probably spends on their small business with 30 employees. Like one small town police department just buying the bulletproof vests for their dogs and their drug dog training kits and their dog radio finders. I mean, just what they spend in small town, 30,000 people, outfitting just the drug dogs, not the drug goons, but just their dogs, is probably more than anybody listening to this who runs a small company spends a year on running their company.
Yeah. Well, I went to one the other day for my job to take a look at an install, and it was a whole warehouse type thing. And they did have a storefront, and they did also sell online. That's why they had a warehouse in the back. They had little old ladies helping to sew together and design drug dog paraphernalia. And the front was all just stuff, you know, vests and harnesses and pockets and all sorts of things that you would put on a drug dog. And I just thought, wow, this industry really warrants a whole shop here in Austin, Texas.
Of grandma's sewing stuff. What would be your answer, Nima, to people who'd say, well, the war on drugs isn't the best thing in the world, but it does create a lot of jobs. See? What would you say to that person?
Well, it misdirects resources. So those are jobs that would have been created in productive, non-destructive enterprises, because the drug war is a destructive enterprise. I'll elaborate further when we get back from the market.
Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll show you the difference between leadership and authority and how to eliminate the demand for authority while remaining peaceful and even calm. We have a forum, and it's got gardening tips. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com.
And as always, we thank you for sticking with us, Freedom Fiends. Unfortunately, it is the last segment of our final show for this weekend, so we do appreciate you sticking with us, and we will get to tweak and review, but I think we're gonna continue to riff a little bit on the fact that the drug war doesn't actually create jobs, or at least the jobs it creates are at the expense of actual productive jobs.
President Jackson created jobs when he sent people out to kill Indians in America.
Right. And those Indians could have done economically productive things, you know. People are an immense resource. They create an immense amount of wealth, and killing off large amounts of them, it hurts the net wealth of wherever you've killed them. You know, Scott Horton likes to put out, think about all the millions of people that died, or I guess the million people that died in Iraq. Some of those could have been genius engineers that went on to cure cancer or something. You don't know. You never will know. The opportunity cost has been destroyed, or the opportunity for that has been destroyed by the death of the war state. And so you might say, well, you created the jobs of the people who bombed them, or the people who went there and manned the checkpoints. But those were destructive jobs that ended up destroying wealth rather than creating them. Or Or FDR. He created jobs, the jobs of people who went out and plowed under crops and killed livestock in order to manipulate the food prices. That obviously wasn't a wealth-creating thing. Those jobs created were wealth-destroying jobs. They were net losses on the economy rather than net gains.
Tweak and review? Are you going to tweak the review or review the tweak?
Yeah, okay.
Be more accurate
I guess I'll tweak the review. Okay, so we started with Iran detente. There's rumors that Barack Obama is going to be open to speaking with the new president of Iran, who is much more approachable of a guy than Ahmadinejad, at least in the Western mind, which sometimes that's all it takes. We pointed out that regime change is what caused the mess in the first place. You know, a lot of people say, well, there'll never be a detente because the American foreign policy wonks won't be satisfied until there's a regime change. But this regime was a direct result of American enforced regime change in the first place, in the 50s, when they installed the Shah through a CIA coup. So it just seems like repeating past mistakes. I'd like to break the cycle, or at least I hope that the cycle will be broken. We also went back to talking about gun safes, my solution for making my wife happy and protecting my little daughter, Lily. And I think where we're landing on now is a V-line gun safe, which is a mechanical function rather than an electronic mechanism for opening the safe. And of course, as Mama Liberty and Michael Dean pointed out, practice, the muscle memory of shaving the seconds off to try to reduce the barrier that the gun safe is in the chain of self-defense whenever I hear that glass breaking or that door being kicked in. We also, of course, talked about Breaking Bad. We went off in a few different directions on that. But what I kind of wanted as the takeaway is bask in Breaking Bad's glorious storytelling. You don't necessarily have to take a side. You don't have to take Hank's side. You don't have to take Walt's side. In fact, I think that that's one of the lessons of truly appreciating art is you can just appreciate it for what it is. You don't have to take the lessons and say, well, I'm Walt. I should be like Walt. Or I'm Hank. I should be like Hank. That's sort of a juvenile way of art critique.
There's nobody to emulate in that show. Nobody.
Yes. Good point.
Nobody. I mean, I think that the most ethical person is probably Walt's son. And he's just ambivalent, you know? He's just there.
Right. Yeah. Although I was not happy with his calling 911 and lying to them.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess it's a spoiler alert. So if you're not caught up, please disregard that last thing. I guess the alert's supposed to go before you say it, but whatever. It's live radio. It's not perfect, but we do try. And then, of course, I guess to just reprise what we just said and what we said before the break, that the drug war, in fact, any government war, you know, maybe somebody brought up the point that that's why it's the aggression principle, because everything the state does, they call it a war on something. But those wars are destructive, right? They're taking resources in order to destroy other resources. So how are you going to grow a market or an economy that way? You can't. So
grow
keep that
a market.
In mind.
Grow a market.
Yeah. We'll be back on Wednesday. Join us then. And of course, next weekend, same fiend time, same fiend stations.
Worms.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, man.
Yep.
Take care.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.